I'll see daylight again once again.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The following is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with school and university students. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayhi Husayniyah on November 3, 2025, on the eve of Student Day and the National Day of Fighting Global Arrogance.
From the time of the Constitutional Revolution till roughly 40 years later, our country was either in a state of chaos and turmoil, it was subject to the meddling of foreign governments, or it was under the brutal, merciless despotism and dictatorship of Reza Khan. This lasted for about 42 years, which means the Iranian nation lived in such a state for several decades. Around 1949 or 1950, certain events unfolded in the country. By God's grace, a national government was formed for the first time in the country, the government of Mossadegh. It was a national government. A national government was formed that stood up to the British. Britain, at the time, was in effect the ruler of the world. It was more superior, stronger, and bigger than all other powers. The country's oil was being given to the British almost for free. It was taken back from them, and using the language of that time, it was nationalized. This means that it was brought under the control of our own government, and a national government was established in Iran. During the 3 years from 1950 to 1953, the conspiracies of the British and their allies brought immense pressure on this government in order to overthrow it. Mossadegh was naive and made an unwitting mistake. In order to free himself from the British, he turned to the US and asked them for help. The US smiled at him. Of course, there was the precedent of Truman's Point 4 program, and there were other similar policies too, which led him to believe that the United States would support him. The US smiled at Mossadegh, but behind his back, they took advantage of Mossadegh's oversight and inattention, They colluded with the British, they orchestrated a coup, and they overthrew the national government that had been formed in the country after 40 years. They then brought back the Shah, who had fled the country. This was a severe blow to the Iranian nation. The meaning of the 28th of Mordad is precisely this. It means that a government elected by the people, which did not want to be at the disposal of Britain and foreign colonialism, and wanted to be a national government, was toppled and destroyed by the US through their use of all sorts of tricks.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Running away from myself, had a barrel inside of my head. I was lying awake in my bed, thinking about all the things that you said. But now I'm stronger, I'm so much stronger.
Welcome, dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you for joining us. Please stay with us over the next hour for another selection of meaningful and enriching programs. We begin with Spotlight, a daily current affairs program that casts a careful eye on today's most significant international developments. Each episode features a roundtable discussion with two expert guests offering informed analysis and commentary. If you're looking to stay engaged with global events, this is your essential listen. Later, we bring you another segment of Radio Productions offering thoughtfully prepared audios, features designed to inform, inspire, and reflect. Up next is Spotlight. Stay with us.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Spotlight. On the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, the streets of the global capitals are filled not just with solidarity, but with a fierce indictment. People worldwide are rising to condemn their own government's complicity in the brutal reality, while diplomats and the architects of Trump's so-called peace plan proclaim progress. The facts on the ground tell a different story. A story of a relentless genocide in Gaza, a story of illegal expansion and summary executions in the occupied West Bank, a story of a people being systematically erased, all under the watchful eyes of an international community that claims all is going well. Tonight, we cut through the false narrative. We stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people by speaking the truth to power and demanding to know how long will this atrocity be allowed to continue. To analyze and discuss this reality, we are joined by Mr. Mick Manapier, co-founder of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign from Glasgow. And Mr. Ali Hamiyeh, political analyst and military expert, joining us from South Lebanon. Well, gentlemen, I'd like to thank you both for joining us in this episode of Spotlight, a very important day. November the 29th has yet again come upon us. The solidarity of Palestine, however, the genocide continues. The occupation continues. Mr. Napier, I would like to go ahead and start off with you with these global protests. Let's go ahead and start off. What does the term solidarity actually truly mean when governments of the West continue to arm and fund this Israeli war machine?
Well, solidarity means what it meant for me as a young man with the Vietnam solidarity movement worldwide, which was successful in defeating American militarism. And solidarity meant that people in the imperial countries, many of them understood that the state that was carrying out a genocide in Vietnam or Palestine is also the enemy of many people in that country. That we don't stand on the sidelines and applaud. We see ourselves as an extension to the Palestinian struggle for freedom. And we see our fate and our future tied to that struggle. Because a state that can be actively involved in the prosecution of a genocide, that can commit which can actively support the crimes that we have seen over many decades, but very dramatically over the last 2 years, that state is the enemy of most of its citizens as well. Because this state has actively promoted the genocide. The British Air Force has flown over Gaza more than 500 times, supplying intelligence to the killers on the ground. And the minister responsible boasting about it. So the genocide is abundantly clear, and unlike genocides before, is really undeniable. But the complicity of our government, which in past genocides has been concealed, has been hidden, is very, very clear. So, for example, very many of your readers might not even know that the British government and the Americans supported the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, that genocidal government. But virtually nobody knows about that today. But millions and millions, maybe billions of people know that Britain and America and the EU have been complicit in this particular genocide. So to answer your question very quickly, solidarity is understanding that the enemy of the people of Gaza is our enemy as well, and that we have no choice but to try to join in that fight in every way that we can, because if they succeed, it becomes a dark world for everybody.
Well, exactly. Mr. Napier, you mentioned something very important, and I'm going to bring that over to Mr. Ali Hamia. Thank you very much for your patience, Doctor. When it comes to what Mr. Napier mentioned about there's even genocides that have been erased, no one even virtually knows about them because how good they've been covered by the U.S. and their allies. In this case, how effective can these international solidarity movements that we have specifically seen today, as they've been proclaimed as the biggest seen yet, be when these political establishments in the U.S., in Europe, and of course their own allies remain so deeply entrenched in, specifically now that we're speaking about Gaza, their support for the Zionist regime?
Well, let's say that the Western Hemisphere, and especially United States, and exactly the Israeli entity, are very good in playing the role of the victim at all time while they are the executioner. And also, they are very good playing at the media whenever they want to put something on the surface or underground. Let's see, example, Sudan. It's still the same going on Sudan for years. And now they just take it out of the sleeve and they put it on the table and everybody is talking about Sudan. So they are very good at, when they want to talk about a genocide or talking about nothing is happening or just bury it underground. Let's see what's going on now. We see the people are with the solidarity standing with the Palestinian people. The governments are acting complicity with the Israeli entity. The people are acting also to save the humanity. I'm talking in general. But the governments are killing the humanity, and especially when we are talking about Gaza. Gaza is the most certified genocide massacre committed by the Israeli entity for now. Since the Holocaust, what they so-called, nothing is in our hand, but we believed it because we stand by a people that been killed and burned in Germany, and we have no evidence, solid evidence of the numbers that been killed. Now we are talking about Gaza in front of all global media, and in front of all the people in the world being killed and being genocide and ethnic cleansing. And we can see that people are in one place, the governments are in other places. So who will be more effective at the end? I think the media will play the biggest role to just to put the spotlight on what's going on in Gaza, what's going on around the world, what's the government of United States and the Israelis, and also from time to time we can see big role of United Kingdom and Germany around the world. But who can continue, who can consider and win the war of media? I think this is the best way now to put on the surface the war on media and the war for the humanity in Gaza. In this case, we have to be with the solidarity of the people standing with the Palestinian now.
Well, exactly, Mr. Hamia. And as we mentioned at the beginning in our intro, that we are laying out the complete truth, this false narrative. With that, you brought up something very important, that who's going to be stopping this as we see it's continuing. And let's go ahead and remind our viewers that with Mr. Napier just over a month ago in Egypt, I mean, we saw these leaders, top leaders of these nations around the world gather with Trump, sign the so-called peace plan. And at that specific moment, many people had a sparkle of hope that, okay, maybe this can actually make a difference. Since then, these executors of Trump's so-called peace plan insist this is still working. I mean, do they not open their phones? Do they not see the media? Do they not see the images, as Mr. Hamia had mentioned? Do they not watch the same horrific scenes? Listen to these heartbreaking stories as we do. We have the acceleration of settlements in the occupied West Bank, where people are literally being kicked out of their homes, being beaten. And if they refuse their homes that they've had for generations, they are killed. And of course, let's not forget about this continuation of genocide in Gaza. Sewage is flooding the tents. What exactly is this term working mean for these people?
I think it means that Israel is succeeding in killing a large number of Palestinians. Still, that's what it means. We're witnessing something akin to what we thought, or many people thought, was consigned to the history books with the great anti-colonial struggles of the 60s and 70s, where many countries in Africa and Asia and Latin America became independent. And it was thought that that was the end of colonialism, because colonialism meant that Britain or France or Germany or America could go anywhere in the world where they had superior means of violence and take what they wanted. They could pillage, rob, exploit, kill, and even exterminate in many cases. Very few of your readers will know that Winston Churchill was responsible for killing 3 million people in Bengal in 1943-44, when there was plenty of food, but they arranged a famine. So that was the crimes of colonialism, and brown-skinned people were inferior and did not have the same rights as white people or their allies. In those days, Britain could invade countries because, quote unquote, we were Christians and they were not. That gave the European countries the right to exterminate and kill. That they don't talk like that anymore, except for Trump. But now it's, we have democracy, whatever that is, and they don't, whatever that is. And therefore, we have the right to bomb and kill and invade. I mean, it's not in the Middle East, but we're watching the news headlines today as Trump begins to invade Venezuela, just like a 19th and early 20th century colonial power. No excuse, no reason other than the thinnest one. And he's using aircraft carriers and will use bombers to defeat that government. It is open banditry. We are watching the wheel of progress run in reverse. And Gaza is simply the most extreme example of that. That ability, that readiness to exterminate people who sit on land that somebody wants. Somebody wants Venezuela's oil. Somebody wants the land surface of Palestine. Those who stand in their way have no rights. And the people who gathered in Cairo were simply Mr. Sykes and Monsieur Picot from the early 20th century, who divided up the Middle East, who drew the borders without any reference to the local people. Balfour said, we don't take into account the opinions of the local people. They're not important. So this racism is so rampant and so extreme that the people of Gaza had no right to determine their own future. That was to be done by America and its allies and servants and clones. So it's a very grim situation, but we see rising anger. Thousands of people have been arrested and charged in Britain with terrorism. I myself have been charged with terrorism and face 14 years in prison for opposing the genocide. In Italy recently, we saw the dockers refuse to move Israeli materials and riots and street fighting in support of the Palestinian people against the Meloni pro-Israel regime. So we see a rising anger. It's certainly rising. And there's nothing strange about that. The barbarity of Israel, although it's far too slow, nonetheless, it's eating away at stability in the Western countries.
Well, exactly, Mr. Napier, if you don't mind me cutting you off, I do want to fit in some more questions as our time is running out. Mr. Hami and Mr. Napier spoke about what the Zionist regime has committed, what the U.S. has backed it with, its impunity, and, of course, the continued silence of the international community. And he did speak about this agreement in Cairo. With the situation, we've seen, of course, that we're still in phase one, and we still see the Hamas fighters under fire, gunfire, still trying to search for the remains of the Zionist captives. And again, the phase one had, just to remind our audience and viewers, they were supposed to return the remains of the captives within 72 hours, which Hamas at the moment mentioned. This is definitely something nearly impossible because of the continued mass of rubble. And again, Hamas continues, wants to do this, despite all of it, upholding their commitment to this so-called peace plan so they can try to get some kind of aid, the stop of attacks, anything to help the Palestinian people. However, on the other side, just one of the examples that we've seen recently on from Zionists on TV, we had a man on Zionist on live television on a Hebrew media channel actually making inhumane comments of a mother, Palestinian mother, who had lost her child, the death of her child, and he made a comment saying she's probably the one that ate up all his food as he died of starvation. I mean, this again, these ridiculous comments are what has let this regime gain the so-called selective application of international law. Mr. Hamia, with your experience with being there in another axis of resistance in Lebanon, axis of resistance in general, what is it that makes Hamas and the resistance uphold their side of these ceasefires, uphold their commitment, knowing what the other side is going to do?
Well, we all know that Israel cannot be trusted. The United States is always creating some new annexes to delete all agreements agreed upon. And it's in front of us, 1701, UN resolution, 10,000 violation by Israel, none by Lebanon, and still the American putting pressure on Lebanon, not on Israel. And also the peace plan that we are talking about that been declared on Sharm el-Sheikh by Donald Trump, we all knew that only the first two or three items or articles out of the 20 points will be implemented. Because we know that the Israelis will directly will go up and say, we will not continue on such agreement. It's like a contradiction within Israel will be coming out because we have to continue what we started. So even though there is agreements, they will not do it. They will not implement such agreements on Gaza, especially on Gaza and Lebanon. So what's like briefly complicity against the Palestinian, supporting the Israeli entity just to continue what started. They told Israel, just agree on the 20 points plan and then do whatever you want as soon as you receive all your hostages or your POWs from the Palestinian, then do whatever you want to do. And that's what they are doing. And exactly they are doing in Lebanon. We see that they call it the blue line in Lebanon, they call it yellow line in Gaza. They call it like exchange POWs in between Lebanon and Israel and nothing is happening. And also with Gaza now, it's the Hamas is implementing all what been agreed upon, the Israeli not. I think that we are lost between the George W. Bush roadmap and the Trump peace plan. All what we hear is only saying and claiming of being with the peace plan, but no, I think now we are in a different stage. Israel at the beginning, they were calling with the Arabs land against peace, then peace against peace, now agreements against peace, and this agreement should be ended and under the wing of the Abraham Accord.
Yes, well, Mr. Hami, as you're mentioning, so basically what we're seeing, anything that comes from the U.S. or the Zionist entity, it's the same agreement, just reworded. Technical terms have been perhaps changed, but it's the same thing that we've been seeing. And in response, the same reaction by the Zionist entity and its Western allies. Let's go ahead and get in a few more questions before we run out. Mr. Napier, let's go ahead and focus just a moment on the situation that occupied West Bank, because this is basically the world's attentions on Gaza, on Sudan, on other parts. The IDF, these settlers, are carrying out what can only be described as summary executions there in the West Bank. Is this a deliberate strategy to shatter any remaining Palestinian social structure, in your opinion?
Yes. It is part of a long-term plan which accelerated over the last 2 years to drive all Palestinians out of Palestine and to replace them with Zionist Jews from around the world, to hold on to the land that was stolen from the Palestinians, which, by the way, this land in international law remains the property of the original Palestinian owners. But so to hold on to that, to hold on to that land, to drive out the owners, the native people, the Palestinians, it's very clear. Look, in science, if you have a simple theory which explains everything, this is like heaven. In this hellish situation in Palestine, a simple theory explains everything. Israel wants Palestine without Palestinians. In order to achieve that, they have to use massive violence, because you cannot charm the Palestinians into leaving. You cannot persuade them to leave. This is their land and they want to hold on to it. Therefore, great violence, ingenious violence, barbaric violence is absolutely a central part of the Zionist plan. And it has to be. It was against the black people in Australia. It was against the native people in North America. It was against the native people of Argentina. The colonists who moved in with their families began to exterminate them. That's what's happening. That everything else is just commentary. The only thing which can stop this is resistance across the entire region of West Asia and around the world by solidarity movements. We can contribute, to answer your first question, we can contribute through solidarity. That is by fighting on behalf of the Palestinian people against their common enemies by an amount that we can never know. We can reduce the enormous price of their freedom. Palestine will be free, but we can lower the cost of that.
Well, Mr. Napier, as you're saying, we can contribute to this. We do have around a little over a minute during this episode, and I would like if you could both kindly answer this question around 30 seconds. In a quick message to our audience, in the face of this ongoing genocide, what does a meaningful solidarity demand of us depend beyond protests? I mean, how can these people who are on the streets, as we saw today, in capitals around the world, force their governments to end their complicity and stop the slaughter now, not tomorrow, but today? Mr. Napier, I'm going to start off with you, please.
The same way that solidarity activity has managed to close down arms companies that were supplying Israel, has forced the Scottish government against its will to recognize the genocide and to support BDS. This is the way forward. And if we can learn from Italy in the last few weeks, that's the way forward to support the liberation of Palestine.
And Mr. Hamia, your answer to this question, please.
Yes, we should, as activists in the solidarity with the Palestinian people, to say that most of the governments around the world, and especially the United States and the Israeli government, to show that they are lying by declaring peace for the Palestinian cause and two states solution. And they are acting at the same time genocide against the Palestinians. So declaring peace and acting genocide against the Palestinians will not work. And we should work hard to continue in expose such lies to the media.
Well, with that, I'd like to thank both of you gentlemen for joining us during this episode of Spotlight. Mr. Mick Napier, co-founder of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, they're joining us from Glasgow. And, of course, as always, Mr. Ali Hamidi, political analyst and military expert, joining us from southern Lebanon. A pleasure to have you both with us. Until next time, goodbye.
IB English Radio.
What if we were able to target cancer cells directly without affecting the healthy tissue surrounding it? Well, that's exactly what the scientists here at the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran have been able to do using yttrium-90. So in this week's episode of Iran Tech with me, your host Ali Reza, we're going to dive deep into how yttrium-90 can be used to target cancer cells in the liver directly without affecting the healthy tissue surrounding it. Stay tuned. Let's clarify something first. When I say liver cancer, I don't mean just the type of cancer that the cancer tumors that originate from within the liver. I also mean other types of cancers that have metastasized, and you can find the metastasized cancer tumors inside the liver as well, which actually makes up the majority of liver cancer cases. And treating liver cancer has been traditionally difficult using surgery and chemotherapy because only about 30% of actual patients qualify to get these treatments. And, you know, speaking of the treatments, chemotherapy itself is unpleasant, and we all know it. You lose body hair, your body is weak. There's plenty of reasons to try to avoid it if you can. And you can using this groundbreaking technology. Microspheres that contain yttrium-90, these tiny glass beads with this radioactive isotope, the radioisotope of yttrium, not the neutral yttrium-89, the radioactive one, yttrium-90. So you can inject these tiny glass beads into the bloodstream, into the blood supply of the cancer tumors, and it can selectively, using selective internal radiation therapy, SIRT, it can target those cancer cells directly and, you know, leave everything else untouched. So this is how yttrium-90 can help treat liver cancer. So first we're going to learn about how it's made, and then we're going to take a closer look at how it works.
Our particle manufacturing process as microspray involves several stages. To create the particle, we first combine the raw materials and form a suspension. We then synthesize them using the Sol-Gel method to achieve the desired chemical composition. After completing the Sol-Gel process, the next step is drying to obtain the target powder. Subsequently, to achieve the intended structural properties, biocompatibility, and a specific characteristic termed PATEL, the synthesized powder undergoes heat treatment at a controlled temperature. Following this, the sample is milled, and the insert process, a term used for spheroidization, is performed to shape the particles into spheres. Once spheroidization is complete, the particles are spherical, but exhibit a broad size distribution, ranging from approximately 15 to 20 micrometers. However, the final product requires particles between 10 to 20 micrometers. To achieve this, we perform particle size classification using mechanical sieving, mechanical screening. After sieving, quality control, QC, is conducted under a microscope. The particles are then sterilized, packaged into specialized vials, and sent for irradiation.
These microspheres, these tiny glass beads that contain yttrium-90, they need to be a very specific size, between 20 to 40, 50 microns, so basically thinner than a hair strand. And they need to be exactly that size or exactly within that range, because if they are too small, then they could essentially seep into other organs of the body. If they are too big, they will just get lodged into the main vessel that is going into the liver. So it needs to be, the size needs to be just right. So once they are injected, they'll essentially lodge themselves around the area where the cancer tumor is getting fed from the blood supply. And they start emitting beta rays that start to shrink the cancer tumor by destroying the DNA of the cancer tumor. And that way, it'll gradually shrink down and get replaced by healthy cells to the point that we can hopefully say that the cancer tumor is essentially gone. And it's compared to the typical external radiation methods, you know, you have to do multiple hospital visits, whereas this is a one-time injection, which is also a lot more precise, hence the selective internal radiation therapy, SIRT. So we're going to take a closer look at how this process works first, and then talk about the broader implications of it.
The patient is first prepared with mild sedation and local anesthesia at the groin. A small incision is made to allow insertion of a catheter into the femoral artery. Using real-time imaging, the catheter is carefully navigated through the arterial network until it reaches the hepatic artery, the main vessel supplying the liver. At this point, a carefully measured suspension of yttrium-90 loaded glass microspheres is injected directly into the hepatic artery. These microspheres, each between 20 and 50 microns in diameter, travel with the bloodstream until they lodge in the tiny arterioles feeding the tumor. Their small size ensures that they preferentially accumulate in the tumor's vascular bed while bypassing much of the healthy tissue. Once the microspheres are in place, they begin to emit beta radiation. This form of radiation penetrates only a few millimeters, targeting the tumor cells while largely sparing the surrounding healthy liver tissue. The beta particles disrupt the DNA within cancer cells, impairing their ability to divide and triggering cell death. This localized radiation gradually shrinks the tumor over several days, as the continuous emission of energy damages the cancer cell's structural integrity. The entire injection process typically takes between 60 to 90 minutes. In the days following the treatment, the microspheres continue to emit radiation, steadily damaging the tumor from within. Throughout this process, the targeted nature of the therapy minimizes systemic side effects typically seen with the traditional chemotherapy or external radiation. By concentrating the therapeutic effects directly at the tumor site, normal liver function is largely preserved, and patients often experience a significant improvement in their quality of life. The precision of this treatment reduces complications and supports a quicker recovery, allowing patients to resume their normal activities sooner. This method represents a significant advance in the treatment of liver cancer, offering a minimally invasive alternative that delivers high doses of radiation directly to the tumor while minimizing exposure to healthy tissues.
It is important to note that the yttrium or Newell glass microspheres injected into patients are biocompatible. The particle size for these microspheres is within the 40 to 50 micron range. Particles smaller than 50 microns risk passing through hepatic capillaries and leaking into the lungs. Particles larger than 50 microns avoid this issue, as they do not migrate from blood vessels into the liver mass. Due to these critical size-dependent effects, Strict quality control, QC testing, is performed on the particles to ensure their size falls within the specified range.
The yttrium glass microspheres discussed here are not our primary focus. However, they represent the latest achievement of the radiotherapy equipment research laboratories at the Nuclear Science and Technology Research Institute and are classified as medical devices. This technology serves as a non-surgical alternative for inoperable tumors, either as a standalone treatment or in combination with chemotherapy. A key advantage of this method over conventional radiotherapy is its ability to spare healthy liver tissues, which are highly sensitive to radiation, thereby minimizing adverse side effects. We selected a product with a 100-day time frame to enable faster commercialization and market readiness. Currently, our laboratory focuses on producing internal radiotherapy products, including brachytherapy techniques. These are targeted therapeutic methods capable of localized treatment of tumor tissues. Producing these devices positions us as a regional hub for advancing medical tourism. It is worth noting that our laboratory is the only active facility in the country and the broader region, excluding Russia, specializing in the production of medical radioactive sources. This grants us significant potential in medical tourism. The production of yttrium-90 glass microspheres has already been successfully implemented at the Nuclear Science and Technology Research Institute. The pilot-scale production stages are now complete. The animal phase has been completed, and all necessary tests, including toxicity, dimensional, and density tests, which are specific to the production process, have been conducted. The physical parameters of the product align with those of commercial sources, and from our perspective, this phase is fully accomplished. However, to enter the market, it was imperative to conduct the clinical phase to determine the product's efficacy. We are currently carrying out the clinical phase in collaboration with Shahid Beheshti, University of Medical Sciences. Approximately 20 patients have been treated with this product so far. Initial results reported by the treating physicians have been satisfactory, meeting the parameters we prioritize, such as absence of toxicity, no leakage to other organs, and concentration in liver tissue. These outcomes have been observed and documented in several early-stage treatment cases. Indeed, the preliminary results have been declared promising. These results may include reductions in tumor size, tumor necrosis, decreased vascularization, diminished blood supply to the tumor tissue, and I would like to highlight reduced metabolic activity within the tumor area. Fortunately, the outcomes thus far have been encouraging. God willing, upon completing the clinical phase and analyzing the results, we will proceed to secure the required permits from the Ministry of Health, Treatment, and Medical Education to introduce this product to the market and commence its commercial distribution.
Today we showed you how our scientists are working hard to cause a breakthrough and sort of a revolution in liver cancer treatment in Iran using these microspheres that contain yttrium-90, the radioisotope of yttrium, which, fun fact, is actually being produced inside this nuclear power reactor because you need a reactor to create radioisotopes. And we're waiting for the final stages of the clinical trials to get the approval to be able to produce it at scale, to become only the second country in the world to be able to produce these yttrium-90 radioisotopes at scale for commercial use. So we're hoping for that to happen sooner rather than later. And with that said, we've come to the end of this episode of Iran Sig. We'll be right back.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.